sooner or later, you can bet your life that every Jew in this building is going to say the same thing. He's a little too Jewish for my taste.
Shalom, and welcome to the Two Jewish Radio Show with Rabbi Sam Kohan and friends, a weekly serving of everything Jewish. We'll have a great hour together of news, music, comedy, and conversation. Our guest this morning on Two Jewish is Rabbi Joel Osseran, Vice President of the World Union for Progressive Judaism. We'll also have a visit from our Two Jewish expert on the international scene, Tom Price, and our new maven on Jewish education, John Ben Asher. Please email your comments to us at twojewishradio18@gmail.com or visit us on the web at twojewishradio.com. And now, here's Rabbi Sam Kohan and Two Jewish.
Shalom. Last week, I attended the Reform Movement Biennial Convention in Orlando, Florida, the every other year gathering of 5,000 people from around the Reform Jewish world. I first went to the biennial back in 1989, when the organization was called the Union of American Hebrew Congregations, the UAHC. It's now called the Union for Reform Judaism. Well, I haven't missed one of these biennials since 1995, and I can tell you they are truly unique and genuinely energizing. In addition to seeing colleagues and friends from everywhere, many of whom I haven't personally seen since the last biennial 2 years before, it's a great opportunity to find out what everyone else is doing in this large and eclectic liberal Jewish world. Because it is so large, the Reform Biennial Convention ends up attracting some very interesting speakers and presenters, some of whom are truly fascinating. There are always some pleasant surprises and ways of thinking about being Jewish in 21st century America and elsewhere that have the capacity to really change the way we do things. Partly this is because in Reform Judaism we are always more than a little obsessed with the new and the different, and tend to embrace exciting trends, often at the expense of what is tried and true. This is both an advantage and a challenge. Reform Jewish leaders are quite willing to break the current mold, to change the way we do things in the hope of creating a more meaningful or relevant vision of contemporary Jewish practice. That also means that if you attend a Reform synagogue, you may discover that it is not quite the same as it was even a few years ago, or sometimes last week, and that it is also very unlikely to be just like the shul you grew up in somewhere else. My favorite presenter at the biennial this time, and there were many celebrities, speakers, and musicians, including U.S. Vice President Joe Biden, was a Ph.D. psychologist named Dr. Robert Brooks, who spoke about resilience, his area of professional expertise. He has written many books. He'll be here on Two Jewish in a few weeks himself as our guest. But what I liked best about Dr. Brooks's ideas was the way that they were intelligent, effective, and still very Jewish. It turns out that Bob Brooks grew up in Brooklyn, New York, went to CCNY, and is a very down-to-earth Jewish guy. He's an expert on the concept of resilience, the ways in which we are able to bounce back from setbacks in life and are able to surmount challenges and ultimately succeed in spite of problems. Trained originally in abnormal psychology, where the focus with patients is on what they're doing wrong, Dr. Brooks came to believe that discovering the positive elements in individual and group psychology was at least as important as diagnosing the problems and treating them. He began to study what it was that differentiated those who came from challenging circumstances and yet achieved very different results in life than others, and he sought to find ways to reinforce those positive tendencies and abilities. Burns started in child psychology. He realized that there were several crucial factors involved in whether kids overcame early problems and flourished, or didn't overcome them and continued to struggle. The resilience of children depended, it turned out, upon one critical factor: whether or not they had an adult who believed in them and conveyed that belief to them. That adult didn't have to be a parent or teacher. In one memorable example he gave, it was the kid's school bus driver who gave her confidence and courage in life. But the existence in a child's life of what one psychologist has called a charismatic individual from whom they drew strength made all the difference in the world. Two children who both grew up in equally troubled conditions would have extraordinarily different results if one of them had such a charismatic adult who gave them strength, while the other did not. The second factor, and it was often derived in part from the first, was the mindset of the individual. Mindset means what we believe is possible. If our mindset is that something can't be done, that it's impossible, that things will never change or won't work out, that is usually self-fulfilling. If instead we believe that challenges exist to be overcome, that we can solve problems, that ultimately we will succeed, well, that too is self-fulfilling, provided it's matched with hard, intelligent work. Much of this is obvious. If you believe you are beaten before you try, you generally won't try very hard. And if you think that things can't change, they usually don't. But what Dr. Robert Brooks adds to this is the understanding that it's true for both individuals and organizations. If we believe in ourselves and in our mission, we'll find that we have the capacity to succeed. If we don't, we'll discover we lack the capacity. Everyone experiences challenges in life. All of us suffer reverses, have losses, are wounded and damaged at times. But whether we rise from those events or not testifies to our resiliency. Resilience allows some of us to keep bouncing back while others continually stumble. The many reverses in Jewish history would lead one to believe that things will always be hard for us, that we as a people will never be able to overcome all the challenges we face. Of course, at times that has been true, but the greater lesson has been that if we Jews are anything, it is deeply resilient. We have constantly found ways to rebound from reverses that should have ended the whole Jewish mission in the world. And we have managed not only to survive, but to renew that mission afresh in every generation. Perhaps one aspect of that unique Jewish ability to be resilient lies in our willingness to adapt and integrate new ideas into our deep and extraordinary tradition. In every generation, we have to find new ways to revitalize Judaism. And somehow we always manage to do so. For us, that charismatic presence, the thing that gives us the confidence to succeed in this challenging task, is God. It is God that allows us the courage to make the changes we need to make to renew our ancient and wise and vital religion again, and to do so in new, fresh, and creative ways. To play us in this morning, here's a cut from a new CD by Micha Biton and Lisa Tsur, the duo Micha and Lisa. It's called Aneni, Answer Me. The title track of their new album, A Voice Calls in the Desert, Answer Me Now, My God. Aneni, Aneni, Aneni. That was Micha and Lisa, Aneni, Answer Me, My God. When we come back in a few moments, we'll meet our guest, Rabbi Joel Oseran, the Vice President of the World Union for Progressive Judaism, the overall organization of Reform, Liberal, and Progressive Synagogues all around the world. We'll explore the reality of the new anti-Semitism in Europe and the rapid development of Reform Judaism in a variety of surprising locations everywhere on the globe. Meet Rabbi Oseran when we return in a few moments here on Too Jewish.
Are you or a loved one facing a terminal illness? Casa de la Luz Hospice offers patients and loved ones the support necessary to face the final months of life. Paid for by Medicare and most private insurances, hospice team members provide medical, emotional, and spiritual care in the security and comfort of the patient's home. Casa de la Luz has been a leading provider of hospice care in Tucson since 1998, and today serves more patients in Pima County than any other local hospice provider. The mission of Casa de la Luz Hospice is to provide superior care to patients and their loved ones, so that they may complete their mission on this earth in comfort, dignity, and harmony. Call 544-9890 to learn more about how Casa de la Luz Hospice can help you. That's 544-9890. Casa de la Luz Hospice, because every day counts.
Hi, I'm Ben, a student at Tucson Hebrew Academy. Attention Arizona taxpayers, you can provide Jewish education to families at no cost to you. Direct your Arizona state tax dollars to JETCO, the Jewish Education Tax Credit Organization, and help make great Jewish education affordable. Here's how it works. Arizona lets taxpayers receive a dollar-for-dollar tax credit for payments made to JETCO. JETCO gives scholarships to kids who attend private schools like Anshe Israel's Kindergarten and Tucson Hebrew Academy, serving students from K-8. Tax credits are different from a tax deduction. When you give to JETCO, you get a 100% tax credit. That means your Arizona state income tax is reduced by the exact amount you've given. You can give up to $1,067 for a single filer and $2,134 for a married couple. You get that whole amount back from your state income tax. Give JETCO a call at 647-8442. That's 647-8442, or go to JETCO.org. You can even choose a future date to process your payment. How cool is that? Make a tax credit contribution to JETCO and build Jewish identity in Tucson for generations of students. And it won't cost you a dime.
We are delighted to welcome to Too Jewish our guest this morning, Rabbi Joel Oseran, Vice President of the World Union for Progressive Judaism, the umbrella organization of all of the Reform synagogues and also some liberal and progressive synagogues located everywhere except North America, and an important player in sort of liberal Judaism all around the world. Good morning and welcome to Too Jewish.
Good morning.
I should say welcome back. Yeah. There have been an increase in anti-Semitic activity from everything that we can see all over Europe, partly a result of the Gaza War, but partly it's been a steady increase for a while. What do you attribute it to, and how does that affect Jews living in all of those countries? If that's not too enormous a question.
It's a big question, but I think if we break it down into categories that maybe can help us understand, to a certain extent, a lot of the anti-Semitism that we see in Western European countries, France in particular, and the episodes of terrorism, Islamic fundamentalist terrorism associated with anti-Israel sentiment, and also the Jewish quasi-Israel anti-Semitism. It's a very integrated sense of anti-Israel and anti-Jewish. So you see in France, you see in the UK, you see in Germany, areas of high Islamic population, a certain tendency to understand anti-Semitism that way. Hungary, I was just speaking to some young adults at the international conference. We see a lot of anti-Semitism in the form of
anti-immigrant, anti-foreigner, neo-Nazi?
The neo-Nazi, exactly. There's a certain fundamental right-wing, fanatic right-wing, political, unfortunately in some European countries, even in in Hungary in particular, there's a sense of the right wing rise to power, the nationalist government in Hungary, for example. So it's not official anti-Semitism, but there's a certain tolerance for the activities of far right wing neo-Nazi skinheads. So there's a fear. The equivalency is that there's a fear of demonstrating one's Jewish identity, walking with a head covering, a kippah. Need to protect and engage the police and security and to protect Jewish institutions. It's very visible, much more so today than it was 10 years ago. And it's becoming a fact of life that the governments of European countries feel obligated to protect the Jewish community, though the sources of the anti-Jewish sentiment may be different.
We will continue to explore that. You know, I had some experience of this when I was in Europe leading a service at the synagogue in Rome, which we can talk about the development of that very interesting community later. And as I left, the kind of the leader of the community called out to me and said, oh, don't forget to take off the yarmulke, the kippah. You know, and here I was walking in Rome on a Friday night, Western Europe, and you feel kind of secure. I helped lead the service. And I thought, yeah, that's just a fact of life, even in what we perceive to be a Western open democracy. We will talk much more with Rabbi Joel Oseran, the Vice President of the World Union for Progressive Judaism, when we return in just a few moments on Too Jewish.
We welcome Pam and David of Freedom Smoke. So your product, a smokeless way to get off of tobacco, people don't really understand exactly what's wrong with cigarettes, or they think it's the same thing that's wrong with your product. Can you explain the difference?
That's true, Rabbi Kohan. Part of it is cigarettes themselves, the FDA made them release the ingredients. There's over 3,000 ingredients in cigarettes. There's four ingredients in electronic cigarettes. Propylene glycol, vegetable glycerine, flavorings from Flavor Art in Italy, who is who we use, and nicotine itself. Our nicotine is USP hospital grade. It's the finest that you can purchase. Nicotine in and of itself is not harmful to the human body. That's why we have so many doctors referring patients that they just cannot get to quit smoking cigarettes. They send them to us for a much healthier alternative.
And where do people go and how do they find your stuff?
They can go to one of our three stores here in Tucson. We've got one at Orange Grove and River, one at Broadway and Swan, and one at 12th and Valencia. Or they can go online to freedomsmokeusa.com.
Thanks very much, and we'll talk next week.
Always a pleasure.
If you have a question, comment, compliment, or criticism, kvetch or kvel, please email us at twojewishradio18@gmail.com. That's T-O-O Jewish Radio 18 at Gmail. Or visit our website at twojewishradio.com. You can stream all past and present shows through the website or download us at the Apple iTunes Store as very popular Jewish podcasts. We now have 1 year to go until we elect a new president of these United States. We continue with our special election year feature, the 2016 Too Jewish Presidential Report, in-depth coverage, unusual stories, and the finest opinion on the air as we choose the new leader for our nation. Republican candidate for president Marco Rubio has done surprisingly well in the early running, including strong performances in the debates. He's now third in most polls behind Donald Trump and Ben Carson. Rubio has significant ties to the Jewish community of South Florida. Billionaire auto dealership magnate Norman Brayman, a past president of the Greater Miami Jewish Federation and a past owner of the Philadelphia Eagles NFL football team, is the single largest backer of Rubio's presidential campaign. But he is also quite close to Rubio and has been instrumental in his rise. Norman Brayman also helped finance the young senator's legislative agenda, employed Rubio as a lawyer years ago, hired Rubio's wife, a former Miami Dolphins cheerleader, as a philanthropic advisor, helped fund Rubio's position as a college instructor, and assisted Rubio with his own personal finances. In 2010, Brayman and Rubio went to Israel together shortly after Rubio was elected to the Senate. Rubio is also getting support from billionaire political donor and casino magnate Sheldon Adelson. Marco Rubio falls into the pool of right-wing, hawkish, strong backers of Israel. We'll see how far he goes once the actual voting starts. That was our 2016 presidential election from the Jewish Perspective update.
When you're looking to buy or sell your home, you probably want Tucson's best realtor on your side. That realtor is Jill Rich. As real estate values change, it's comforting to know that Jill Rich knows Tucson's real estate landscape. She follows the trends. She knows the neighborhoods. She even knows how to help you find financing. But most importantly, Jill cares. It doesn't matter if you're looking for a starter home or a castle. It's like having your bubby in the realty business. For sellers, Jill will develop a personal marketing program that'll sell your house fast. There's no one who knows Tucson real estate better. You can reach Jill Rich at Long Realty's River and Campbell office. Call 349-0174. Jill Rich, providing strong representation in a caring way. Call 349-0174. Is your aging loved one unhappy and having a hard time adjusting to life around them? The TMC Gero Psychiatric Center at Handmaker may be able to help. TMC Gero Psych specializes in providing short-term inpatient services for older adults experiencing behavioral health issues. Did you know that most people with depression get better when they seek help? With the right treatment, those with anxiety can overcome and learn to cope with their fears, and individuals with dementia can continue leading quality lives. Our team, led by a geriatric psychiatrist, brings expertise from disciplines across a variety of specialties to ensure your loved one receives the right diagnosis and treatment. For more information about our services, please call 324-4600. The TMC Gero Psychiatric Center at Handmaker. Call 324-4600. Let's talk about how we can help.
We welcome our expert on the international Jewish scene, Tom Price. Good morning, Tom.
Good morning, Rabbi.
So we were talking about wine and what makes wine kosher and some of the incredible varieties of great wine growing areas, many of which now produce kosher wines. So although for the vast majority of Jews, including some Orthodox Jews, the idea that wine has to be kosher in order for it to be acceptable to drink is no longer central for some Jews, unless that wine is produced by a kosher wine producer, which means the winemaker is Jewish and the people that handle the grapes are Jewish. They have to observe Shabbat, so they have to be Shomer Shabbat in the preparation of the wine. And if it is not basically pasteurized, heated to the boiling temperature, then that wine cannot be handled when the bottle is opened by anybody except a Jewish, and even some would say an observant Jewish person, in order for other Jews to drink it. So that's the totality of it. They're trying to avoid the idea that it's used for impure purposes or pagan purposes, or I suppose Catholic purposes of transubstantiation. I don't know. It's a complicated formula. But it dates back to the Talmud, and it's pretty significantly strong among the ultra-Orthodox anyway.
Well, I think one of the most offensive parts of this whole set of restrictions to our non-Jewish friends and neighbors, historically at least, when, you know, back in the day, everyone who identified as Jewish was de facto Orthodox. There was no other way to be Jewish.
Right.
So everyone observed this set of restrictions.
That's up until the year 1800 or so. I mean, fairly
sometime in the 19th century. So for the vast majority of Jewish history, most Jews were what we would today call Orthodox. They observed all the commandments, including rabbinic commandments, which, I mean, this stuff about wine isn't in Torah. It's from Talmud.
Correct.
So presumably it didn't go into effect until the second or third century BCE.
Yeah, Mishnaic times, or maybe even later.
Right. But in the early Christian period, certainly, it took on a new and sort of ghastly aspect, which was wine that even might have been used for communion and then served to a Jew was deemed unkosher because it was used for what the rabbis considered idolatry. They considered communion to be a form of idol worship because the whole notion of the Trinity struck both early Jews and early Muslims as polytheistic and paganistic and all that. So this practice of drinking only kosher wine and avoiding wine that even could possibly have been used for communion was an early cause of anti-Judaism in Roman times, for example.
Yeah, it's also worth noting that wine was the beverage that everybody drank. It wasn't, you know, just for fine meals. It was kids drank it just watered down more. You know, they mixed the wine often at the table. So it wasn't...
Right, and it wasn't only rich people.
Right.
And it wasn't only when you're out at a fancy restaurant. It was at home with meals.
It was basically your basic beverage.
Yeah.
So it was very important that they made these distinctions, and it definitely made a difference between the Jews and their neighbors who would drink any kind of wine. And so I think that's right. It probably contributed to some of the, I don't know if it specifically contributed to anti-Semitism the way some of the other dietary rules highlighted Jews, but it definitely created a difference.
Well, it limited the ability of Jews to socialize with non-Jews and to right. drink in the same taverns or in the same homes even. And so that contributed to the perception, which has been remarkably persistent, that Jews are clannish and standoffish and consider themselves superior and better than everyone else. And that is one of the many sources, historically, of anti-Semitism.
And it all comes down to wine. Thanks, Tom. We'll talk next week.
Look forward to it.
We welcome John Ben Asher, the head of school of Tucson Hebrew Academy, K-8 day school here in southern Arizona. Good morning, John. Welcome.
Boker Tov.
Boker Or. Jewish education is so important.
Yes.
You know, they say there's 100 Eskimo words for snow and there's 100 Jewish words for learning and education. What's the value of a Jewish education?
It's a great question. And the value of a Jewish education really can't be underestimated. The Jewish people is not the most populous people on earth. And it's important for us to be able to pass our heritage down to future generations. We've received such a rich heritage, such an important, valuable culture and inheritance. And it's really our responsibility to pass it forward to the next generation. Jews offer so much in the world, both internally in terms of having a structure for our lives, having milestones to celebrate in a way that reflects who we are and who we've come from. We're talking about birth to death, marriages, bar and bat mitzvahs, coming of age, moving into a new home, all kinds of exciting things. And it's great to have a context of Jewish tradition and practice in order to celebrate those moments of our lives.
You know, there are lots of people who say, well, you know, I'm just Jewish. But how do they know that? Where do they get that concept
from? It's a great question, and I think each person can answer that in their own way according to their worldview and how they live their lives. The value of a Jewish education is beyond celebrations and traditions, too. It's about knowing who you are and knowing what you're supposed to do in the world. As Jews, we believe greatly that it's our job to make the world a better place, tikkun olam. And having been raised in a Jewish household and educated at the Tucson Hebrew Academy, that's been a priority for me. So when it comes to being empathetic, caring about other people, looking for opportunities to do justice and to do good things in the world, those are values that I hold, and I believe they're important to me because I was raised in a context where those values were really taught and cherished.
What's one way that Jewish values are taught in a day school environment that's unique?
In a Jewish day school environment, we've got, like you said, 100 ways of teaching those kinds of values. One of them is through study, reading text, understanding what our sages have taught and have to say about a certain point of contention or a question or a philosophy. And another is through celebrations and learning how to live the joy of being a Jew.
We will talk much more about those Jewish educational ideas and many more next week. Thanks, John.
Thank you.
When we come back on Too Jewish, we'll hear the old Jewish joke of the week.
For 100 years, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery has been known for their compassionate commitment to all the families of our community. Known as the most beautiful final resting place in southern Arizona, Evergreen serves all faiths. Their experience conducting Jewish funerals, Reform, Conservative, and Orthodox, is second to none. From traditional services to the unique, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery offers the best. To speak to a family advisor, call 888-7470, 888-7470.
My name is John Ben Asher, and I'm the head of school at the Tucson Hebrew Academy. Tucson Hebrew Academy is a pluralistic kindergarten through eighth grade Jewish day school. We foster educational excellence through an interdisciplinary, integrated general studies and Judaic curriculum. We teach our students to apply Jewish values and learning to everyday life, enabling them to make their community and the world a better place. Our engaging, talented faculty ensure a rigorous, interactive, supportive learning environment. From the early years through comprehensive high school prep, children thrive in THA's uniquely enriching educational community and culture. Our 41-year tradition of excellence continues to produce highly skilled, critical, and creative thinking students with a strong moral compass and deep understanding of Jewish identity, traditions, and values, well prepared for the challenges to come. Tucson Hebrew Academy, thaaz.org, 529-3888.
The fifth Temple Emmanuel pilgrimage trip to Israel with me, Rabbi Sam Kohan, is set for May 29th to June 9th of 2016. If you're interested in going on this fabulous journey to Israel, seeing it all from Tel Aviv to Haifa to Tzfat to the Sea of Galilee to amazing Jerusalem, please email tojewishradio18@gmail.com, tojewishradio18@gmail, or call 520-327-4501 for more information and an itinerary. It's time now for our old Jewish joke of the week, Jewish humor your Bubby and Zadie knew, brought to you by Too Jewish as a Public Service. Yeshiva University decided to field a rowing team. Unfortunately, they lost every race. Even though they practiced for hours every day, they never managed to come in any better than dead last. Finally, the team decided to send Morris Fishbein, its captain, to spy on Harvard, the perennial championship team. So Morris schlepped off to Cambridge, Massachusetts, and hid in the bushes next to the Charles River. He carefully watched the Harvard team in its daily practice. After a week, he came back to Yeshiva University. "I figured out their secret," he announced. "Tell us, tell us," his teammates shouted. "Well," said the spy, "they do everything the other way around to us. In their boat, they've got 8 men rowing and only 1 man shouting." That was the old Jewish joke of the week, special feature of Too Jewish, just for you. You should live and be well and row, don't shout. And now a word of Torah. The urge to journey into the unknown is a major motivation in the Torah. We saw it with Abraham a few weeks ago. We find it in the lives of most of our great ancestors, and we encounter it perhaps most powerfully in the story of this week's portion of Vayetze. At the start of the tale, Jacob leaves his family and his home, both of which happen to be in Beersheba in Israel, and journeys towards Haran in Sumeria, really southern Turkey today. He has nothing with him at all, not even a bedroll, and is forced to lay his head on a rock to sleep. In this state of extremis, God brings him a promise in the form of a famous dream, a ladder going up to heaven with angels ascending and descending, and a pledge of family, land, and ultimate safety and security. Jacob, our forefather, wakes from this dream and says pointedly, "Hey, God was in this place, and I didn't know it." That's something all of us can say from time to time, isn't it? An incredible message of awareness from the true father of our people. But there's another important message in Vayetze. It is that Jacob must leave everything familiar in order to allow him to find God's presence. Throughout human history, religions have been founded by individuals who left ordinary lives and places and wandered off into the wilderness, usually the desert. Abraham, Jacob, and Moses are the most obvious Jewish pioneers. Buddha, Jesus, and Muhammad fit the same pattern. In order to become who we seek to be spiritually, we must begin by leaving what we already know. And then, when we finally encounter God in the wilderness, we learn that God was back there at home too. We just weren't ready yet to notice that fact. You know, of all the major figures in Genesis, Jacob is the most interesting. He's complex, clever, tricky, bold, resourceful, and he has a rather spectacularly complicated love life, all of which take off in this week's portion. But it's that moment when he realizes how little he really knows that makes him most human, most like us today. And it's his journey into the wilderness alone with nothing that helps us understand that spirituality is not found by repeating what is most comfortable. Often we too struggle to figure out where to find God. If we are lucky and aware, we will come to realize that God is in this place, indeed in every place. All we have to do is go out into the wilderness for a bit, open our eyes, and accept that fact. When we return in a moment here on Two Jewish, Rabbi Joel Oseran, the Vice President of the World Union for Progressive Judaism, will explore the new anti-Semitism in Europe and the much more positive news on the development of Reform Jewish synagogues and communities around the world, including in China. Hear about it when we come back on Two Jewish.
Hi, Doris. How are you?
Well, Carol, to be honest, now that I'm a little older, I can't get out as much as I'd like. I miss seeing people.
Why don't you come over to my place for lunch on us? The food's delicious. So many choices. And I have a special table with my friends every day. They'd love to have you join us.
Is there much to do there?
There are lots of activities every day. Mondays is Mahjong. Tuesdays, I do yoga. Wednesdays, we go shopping or to the museum or a restaurant. Thursday is my exercise class. There are book groups, speakers, Shabbos services, concerts, a game room. I'm busier than ever.
Where do you live?
I'm at Handmaker. And the people are great. Please come over for lunch. You'll love it. It's even kosher. Just call me at 322-7035.
Handmaker Jewish Services for the Aging offers the full spectrum of quality senior living and post-hospital rehabilitative care. Call 322-7035. Handmaker for life. 322-7035.
Are you or a loved one facing a terminal illness? Casa de la Luz Hospice offers patients and loved ones the support necessary to face the final months of life. Paid for by Medicare and most private insurances, hospice team members provide medical, emotional, and spiritual care in the security and comfort of the patient's home. Casa de la Luz has been a leading provider of hospice care in Tucson since 1998, and today serves more patients in Pima County than any other local hospice provider. The mission of Casa de la Luz Hospice is to provide superior care to patients and their loved ones, so that they may complete their mission on this earth in comfort, dignity, and harmony. Call 544-9890 to learn more about how Casa de la Luz Hospice can help you. That's 544-9890. Casa de la Luz Hospice, because every day counts.
We continue with our Two Jewish update on news of Jews around the world with commentary.
The Rabbinical Council of America, the main modern Orthodox rabbinical group, formally adopted a policy prohibiting the ordination or hiring of women rabbis. That policy, announced last week by the RCA, came after a direct vote of its membership. The resolution states, Rabbinical Council of America members with positions in Orthodox institutions may not ordain women into the Orthodox rabbinate, regardless of the title used, or hire or ratify the hiring of a woman into a rabbinic position at an Orthodox institution, or allow a title implying rabbinic ordination be used by a teacher of Limudei Kodesh, religious studies, in an Orthodox institution. This resolution does not concern or address non-rabbinic positions such as Yoatzot Halacha, advisors on Jewish law, community scholars, Yeshiva University's graduate program for women in advanced Talmudic study, and non-rabbinic school teachers, the resolution concludes. So long as no rabbinic or ordained title such as Maharat is used in these positions, and so long as there is no implication of ordination or rabbinic status, the resolution is inapplicable. Maharat is an acronym meaning female spiritual, legal, and Torah leader. It's a designation granted by Yeshivat Maharat, an institution for women in Riverdale, New York, founded by prominent modern Orthodox rabbi Avi Weiss. In 2010, following the establishment of Yeshivat Maharat, the RCA issued a resolution on women's communal roles, stating that the RCA reaffirmed its commitment to women's Torah education and scholarship at the highest level, and so on, but prohibited the idea of women being ordained. A follow-up 2013 resolution by the RCA on Yeshivat Maharat, when it ordained its first group of Maharats, said, due to our foresaid commitment to sacred continuity, we cannot accept the ordination of women or the recognition of women as members of the Orthodox rabbinate, regardless of title. The RCA viewed this event as a violation of our Mesorah, our tradition, and regrets that the leadership of the school has chosen a path that contradicts the norms of our community. While it's not clear what impact this new resolution will have in the modern Orthodox world, the fact is that the women ordained by Yeshivat Maharat, who are called Rabbah, the Aramaic equivalent of rabbi rather than the Hebrew-English term rabbi, all have found positions working as rabbis in Orthodox congregations, and all are currently employed doing so. Sometimes reality outstrips the official positions of Jewish movements or organizations, even in the Orthodox world. In other news, the head of the European Parliament's main body for promoting relations with Israel announced he is opposed to the new EU guidelines that were passed recently that label products from the West Bank uniquely. Fulvio Martucciello, the chair of the European Parliament delegation for relations with Israel, said last week that he sides with Israel regarding its criticism of the European Commission's issuing of guidelines requiring labeling. "We Europeans have not been the best partner, and we are pushing back this partnership," Martucciello said in a speech in Brussels before members of the American Jewish Committee. The guidelines were designed to stop products from beyond the 1967 Green Line and to exert political pressure on Israel to push forward peace talks with the Palestinians. Israeli officials are outspoken in their opposition to the new labeling. It was adopted by the European Commission in Brussels a little over a week ago. Deputy Israeli Foreign Minister Tzipi Hotoveli said the guidelines were discriminatory and designed to promote boycott. In September, Prime Minister Bibi Netanyahu invoked European anti-Semitism when he said about the plan, "We have historical memory of what happened when Europe labeled Jewish products." A senior European diplomat said such allusions are emotional and without political basis. He added they were designed to give clarity to consumers, these labels, not boycott Israel. Still, the new guidelines were subject to last-minute discussions in Brussels because of their sensitivity. According to the guidelines, they will recommend that labels indicate not only the geographical origin of West Bank products, but also whether they originate from Palestinian or Israeli producers. In response, Jerusalem suspended some diplomatic dialogue with the EU for a few weeks to protest Brussels' decision to publish these guidelines that now allow member states to place consumer labels not made in Israel on products that are produced across the Green Line. There are literally hundreds of territorial conflicts and disputes going on right now in the world, but only Israel is being singled out for this kind of treatment by the European Union.
Say nighty night and kiss me. Just hold me tight and tell me you'll miss me while I'm alone and blue as can be. Dream a little dream of me.
In happier news, actress Zoe Deschanel has converted to Judaism. Deschanel is the daughter of a Quaker and a Roman Catholic. She converted before marrying producer Jacob Pechenik. There's no information on what denomination of rabbi supervised her conversion. The two were married in June, a month before the birth of their daughter, Elsie. Deschanel, who is 35, stars in the Fox sitcom New Girl and has appeared in many films, including Mumford, 500 Days of Summer, and Almost Famous. And now the new girl is Jewish, and so is her daughter. And that's the Two Jewish News of Jews around the world.
We welcome back to Two Jewish. Our guest this morning, Rabbi Joel Oseran, the Vice President of the World Union for Progressive Judaism, the largest, really the sole organization of liberal and progressive congregations all around the world, with the exclusion of North America, which has its own institutions, although they're closely allied. We've been talking about anti-Semitism. There's been a huge impact. In Israel, we see so many French Jews moving to Netanya. You know, it's as though people in Western Europe are beginning to think that maybe Western Europe won't be the place anymore. Do you think that's exaggerated in the press? Is that a real experience that people are having there?
I think to some extent it's... it's topical when there are acts of terror and there's the engine of immigration the press really does jump on it. Our congregations in France are not communicating to us that there's a mass exodus, and I suspect that there won't be. It's very difficult to pick up and leave one's home. Usually it's because of extreme need, either the push out, Western Europe is nowhere near that situation. So I don't suspect there's going to be mass aliyah immigration to Israel. But it does set the Jewish community on edge. There's an edge of on how one lives one's Jewish life, how one understands the safety of children going to schools, public demonstrations. There are security in numbers. There are demonstrations pro-Israel and very clear Jewish demonstrations of pride all over Europe. So it's not like Jews are cowed and lock themselves up, not at all. But there's, on the individual, personal basis, wave of terror. And terror is the uncontrolled, unpredictable moment when some violent act can be conducted. That is definitely something we see not only in Israel with the current wave of terror, but it's possible anywhere in the world. It happens in the United States, but it hasn't been focused on the Jewish community per se, so Jews don't feel that there's any wave of anti-Semitism in America, but there is an edge of the random shootings or the unpredictable violence that can erupt anywhere in any country in the world. So I think in a way it's a global condition that individuals take the most primitive, in some cases, weapons and cause havoc. It builds into a sense of fear. And for the Jew who has a history of unfortunate history of being super sensitive to the violence that has been committed against the Jewish people, we are more sensitive and more concerned. And then translate this concern into community action. But I believe that there's it's a worldwide phenomenon, and it's not only a Jewish matter.
Shifting to some of the really positive things going on with the World Union. We may come back to anti-Semitism again. We are Jews, but the World Union has been setting up new congregations under your initiative in some very interesting places. Can you talk about some of those?
Sure. Look, Jews are mobile, and we travel. We've always been courageous and following opportunities, and perhaps the newest frontier of Jewish development is Asia. There's a number of Jewish communities in China, Beijing, Hong Kong. Those are more established. The newest of these communities is Shanghai. I had the opportunity over the last 4-5 years to shepherd the development of a community that is mostly expats, they're called. These are Americans or Europeans, Australians who settle in Shanghai because there's opportunity. It's a hugely developed economic center of China, and the sky's the limit in terms of the, even with current Chinese difficulties. Shanghai is a mighty power.
It's been the center,
power.
Kind of the engine of driving so much of the development in China, which
exactly.
is obviously a gigantic market and huge production. So tell us a little bit about how that process of creating a non-Orthodox, a Reform congregation in a distant shore, how did people contact you? Do you contact people? How does it work?
Very good question, because it took years of developing and finding the right contacts. You can't advertise in the Chinese press that the
Reform Jews wanted
is looking for those. But we develop contacts. We find names and email addresses. I sent out a letter to about 50 people on a mailing list that, together with other colleagues who had traveled to China and to Shanghai, who met people, who gave me their names and emails. And from a letter I sent, I received a response from a gentleman who said, I'm Israeli. I grew up in the Reform Movement in Israel. I went to EIE, which is an exchange program. I lived in America. I worked on Reform Kibbutz in Israel. I'm now working.
There are only a couple.
There are only two. And I am now living in Shanghai with my family. And I want a Jewish community that I can feel good about, that I can participate fully. I'm happy to be of help. It was an amazing response when I got it. And from that initial contact, we developed, because communities are people, and it only takes one. It's one of the lessons I've learned in my work around the world is the power of one individual who's committed and who believes that this is important for themselves and usually for their children. I must say that the core group of the Shanghai community are family people, and they see that they need for their Jewish identity of their children a community.
I'm going to ask one last question, running out of time. The former Soviet Union has been an area of tremendous change. Many of the Jews, of course, came to Israel and some came to the United States, but many stayed, and there's now a burgeoning Jewish community, sometimes in areas not so safe, like Ukraine. There's a strong liberal presence. That community is now moving to a second stage in which they're doing things like building buildings and such. Can you talk a little bit about what's happening right now in the former Soviet Union?
It's an amazing story because in my work of being a vice president for almost 30 years, I've seen the changes from sneaking into the airport in Russia with talitot and kippot.
Sewed into your lining or hidden in your bags.
To give to the Jews who could not openly worship, to a situation where we have with Russia, Ukraine, and Belarus over 40 congregations, six rabbis who have been ordained from Reform Movement rabbinical seminaries, the largest youth movement, Netzer, in the former Soviet Union, the unbelievable development of a rabbinical training institute in Moscow.
It's incredible to think about.
Funded in part, listen to this, by the German government, because the rabbinical school in Germany has signed a letter of agreement with the Moscow State University for the Humanities to be a channel of Jewish studies for students in Moscow who will get a BA in Jewish studies, continue for a master's degree at Potsdam University, which is the sister university of the Abraham Geiger College, and then additional 2 years of rabbinic training provided by the Geiger College for students who will go back to Russia, Ukraine, Belarus, and serve our Reform communities. It sounds like science fiction to imagine that all of this is happening in the lifetime of one simple Jew who has seen the changes.
So I can tell you, half the lifetime.
yes, thank you. Or even less. but the idea that in this day and age, there are the ability for changes to take place, and Rabbi Cohen, it gives me the sense of optimism coming back to my country, Israel, and where I live, and the painful condition of the peace process. And do I stay optimistic? Yes, I do, because I've seen in my work the abilities of conflicts to be resolved. And it's not easy, it takes time, but the idea that we're not locked in forever to certain situations, my privilege of seeing the change in the world and in the Jewish people has given me cause for great optimism.
I want to thank Rabbi Joel Osterend for a great visit here on Two Jewish. People can find out more about the World Union for Progressive Judaism on the website. It's WUPJ.org. Did I get that right?
Yeah, www.wupj.org. And just one quick comment. Actually, the American Reform Movement is a affiliate of the World Union. It's one of the seven regions of the world, and the strongest, the most powerful, if you will, the Reform community here, helping us to do the work around the world.
And you can participate in that work as well. When we come back on Two Jewish, we'll hear about next week's guest get a final musical playout.
For 100 years, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery has been known for their compassionate commitment to all the families of our community. Known as the most beautiful final resting place in southern Arizona, Evergreen serves all faiths. Their experience conducting Jewish funerals, Reform, Conservative, and Orthodox, is second to none. From traditional services to the unique, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery offers the best. To speak to a family advisor, call 888-7470, 888-7470.
Thanks for being here with us this morning on Two Jewish with me, Rabbi Sam Kohan. Join us next Sunday at 9 a.m. Our guest will be the remarkable and wonderful Kinky Friedman, who has a new album out for the first time in, three decades or so, called The Loneliest Man I Ever Met. Our playout this morning on Two Jewish comes from Chaim Shlomo Mayez and Dudi Kalish, a Hasidic contemporary romp called Baskol, which means divine voice. May you have a Shavua Tov, a good week, and a week, we pray, of peace.
Arbuim yoim koidem, al zois anachni moidem, di yeshi yishendu, in a mazal di gishu, herz.